With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Greetings, Grapple fans, and welcome along to episode 71 of the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. I am your host for this evening, Andy Wales, and I am joined once again by my audio tag team partner, even the one and only Mo Chatra. Mo, good evening. We're back from the beginning.
Absolutely, yeah. So not just joining for the main events, here for the prelims, the curtain jerkers, as they say. So
you're back on the full-time roster now.
Absolutely, yeah, and good to be back. So I'm not going to do a John Cena on you, don't worry about that.
I won't call you a punk-ass bitch.
Oh, let's not go there. I've been called this, though.
And then you can call me names and I can stand there for a few minutes going, as I try and remember what I was going to say.
That's right.
Speaking of Roman Reigns, that kicks us off nicely, actually, because we are going to preview Hell in a Cell pay-per-view this evening. But before we get started on that, obviously that is a SmackDown exclusive pay-per-view. But before we kick off with that, just quickly onto the Raw side of things, and more, it seems quite obvious now. I mean, the rumours were abound that we were going to see a Shield reunion. I mean, perhaps it's the kind of thing that you'd expect that maybe save for, you know, one of the big events. Perhaps not WrestleMania, given the prominence of each of the guys individually, but perhaps something like a SummerSlam. But no, it looks like we are going to see a Shield reunion at the next pay-per-view.
Well, absolutely, that's right. So we saw in the backstage segment Roman Reigns at the end of the show sitting there hurting from a beating, and Ambrose walked up to him, and Reigns stood up, and then before he knew it, Seth Rollins turned up, and they all looked at each other, and the fans going ape shit in the arena, and I'm sure many were at home. It's something that you know, many fans have looked forward to almost since the three split up several years ago, and the reaction was great. Online, social media, it was very good as well, and it's perhaps the only single thing that can get Roman Reigns a positive crowd reaction. So I think this is the last resort, and they're finally playing that card. So fair play, and it looks like we will get to see the Shield reunion, and we will finally get to hear Roman Reigns cheered again.
He's been cheered lots of times. I mean, when Braun Strowman put him through a table, when he put him through an ambulance, when he when he knocked him out.
There is that. Yeah.
When the Mr. Ash hit him with a chair. He's had lots of cheers. He's usually been getting beat up in the process.
When he's at the receiving end of something. But it's something to be excited about, I guess. And it looks very, very imminent now. And
we didn't see the little fist bump thing, though. I mean, at least that's one you know, one consolation in this is at least it wasn't The Miz and The Miztourage. You know, we were going to get a Shield reunion just to take on The Miztourage. I mean, that would feel, it wouldn't feel at all special, but The Miz and The Bar together, I think that makes it a hell of a lot better. And obviously the way that they've been teasing it with The Miz, you know, having a go at Reigns, and then we saw them set them up to do the triple power bomb, and then they did the fist bump thing over it as well. You know, it was clear what they were setting up for, but it's kind of, I guess, for fans, it's going to be fun. But the thing is, more, it's after such a popular group split, when they get back together, you can only do that once. It's, you know, that first time that they actually get back together, that, you know, that can only happen once. It can only be the first time you ever see them get to back together first, like they did with DX, you know. And then the thing is, after that, whenever you keep getting them back together, it's kind of the diminishing returns thing. So do you think that this is worthy of putting them back together, or do you think perhaps WWE are maybe sort of getting a bit trigger happy on this, you know, getting an itchy trigger on this one?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think that they are so desperately unhappy about the reactions Reigns continues to receive, very adverse reactions, that they feel that this is almost the only thing that they can use to try and get a good reaction. And that instead of turning him heel and then to turn him face, I think that this is the only other way of getting the crowd on his side, by bringing him back together with Rollins and Ambrose and having a bit of a run with the three of them together. And then it might be that, you know, they go with a split of sorts later on down the line, or it might just be a one-off. And then they might see how he fares after that. But I think they're just trying desperately to get fans to cheer for him. And I think that's the reason for them going with this. We'll see what happens. I mean, they might decide to hold off until the Survivor Series and then have maybe an elimination match involving the three, or and a couple more, or maybe just a six-man with these three. But it's good that that for nostalgia at least, they've brought the three together at last, and we'll see how that pans out on Raw over the coming weeks.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll get booed as soon as he goes back to be singles again.
I'm sure he will.
Oh dear me, you have to laugh. All right then, so Hell in a Cell, let's start looking at it. We'll quickly mention the pre-show, Chad Gable, Shelton Benjamin versus the Hype Bros. I might watch this just to see how Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin are progressing. I certainly don't want to see it for the Hype Bros, despite the tease that we saw a few weeks ago that they might be splitting up. Any reason that anybody should really watch this one then, Mo?
No. No. Not really.
No. We ain't going to bullshit you, people. We ain't going to bullshit you.
No, there's just nothing here. No. You know, Gable's got talent, and Shelton Benjamin is obviously a solid hand, but you know, this match will be okay. I don't think it'll be a bad match. It won't be a great match or anything close to that, but it's just there to get things started for the night, and it will just fill 5-10 minutes, and then people forget about it 5-10 minutes afterwards.
Yeah.
Really, you know, the only thing that might happen is, as you mentioned, a possible split of the Hype Bros, but who really cares?
Exactly, who cares? We just need something to to put in the middle of the 50 minutes of video packages. What about the other tag team match on the card, for the tag team titles inside the Hell in a Cell as well, the New Day versus the Usos? These guys have been tearing it up at times on and off the mic. They've been putting in some good promos together, had some fantastic matches This is going to be something different, though, isn't it? Hell in a Cell in a tag match. It could be quite quite an entertaining spectacle and interesting to see what these guys will come up with in terms of how they're going to make this work.
Yeah, it is. I mean, whether the third member of the team will be outside of the cage, I don't even know if there's room around the ring, because obviously the whole cage itself takes up so much room, even outside the ring itself. I mean, we'll see. There's some kind of arrangement. There'll probably be a way of working the third person in so that they have some involvement. And often with gimmick matches, they try and work them in somehow. The match itself, I'm sure, will be a really, really good one. Their match on the SmackDown where the New Day regained the titles was one of the best matches on SmackDown this year. I thought it was really, really good. And, the other matches that they've had between them have also been of a very high standard, so I'm expecting nothing less. And if anything, I'd expect them to come up with some very clever spots, innovations for this match. And I think this could possibly be the best of the lot between them. So it really has been a very enjoyable feud between them.
The question is, though, Moyes, like, what? Because you look at the tag team division on the SmackDown, it's so thin, you know, there's just nothing there. Is, you know, what do you do with these guys? Because if the New Day retain here, does that almost say that that's got to be them virtually done? Or, you know, do you flip the title again, you know, just to keep this feud going because there's so little else to for them to work with?
Yeah, I think, it's a feud that has obviously been going for a number of months now. And I think most fans, even though they've enjoyed the matches between them, and also some of the promos as well, it will still get tiresome, because obviously we would have seen it on several pay-per-views as well as on weekly TV. So it's time that really they move in a different direction. I mean, you're quite right. There is a dearth of talent on the tag team roster on SmackDown, but it might be that they decide to go in a slightly different direction, possibly give Fashion Police or whatever they call this week an unexpected run with the New Day and try and move in a more comedy direction. And I wouldn't put it past creative to come up with something like that, falling off of a very enjoyable program, which has helped to elevate the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. But I think there is the likelihood that there will be a change of direction. I don't see him going much further with these two teams, albeit they are head and shoulders the best teams within the SmackDown roster. And I think that the New Day will retain the titles, and the Usos will move in a different direction, but inevitably they'll have to come back into title reckoning. But it might not be on SmackDown. I think when they next have another roster shake-up, they might be primed and ready to go back to Raw. And if they do, there'll be a great team to have paired against the likes of Cesaro and Sheamus. And those two teams can have a fantastic program, and that can go for several more months in the new year.
Mm. So what? I mean, that's the thing, is it? What's the answer here? Is it, is it build up Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin? Is it introduce some new tag teams to the division? Because, we look at how well the tag teams have been represented in the titles themselves, the matchups that we've been having on SmackDown and Raw. It's just, unfortunately, behind, the tag title matches, there hasn't been an awful lot. There's like what, four or five teams on Raw, but in terms of fan perception on SmackDown, you've only really got two or three teams. That's the thing, isn't it? So is it that we need some new blood feeding into SmackDown, maybe calling up something like TM61 from NXT, or maybe the Authors of Pain, something like that? Is that really what SmackDown needs?
Yeah, I think that's possible, but I don't expect to see any transfers from NXT over to SmackDown before the NXT event that takes place prior to the Survivor Series. But then, that said, that's only a few weeks away anyway. It might just be that they go with a shorter program of only maybe a few weeks to last up until the Survivor Series pay-per-view, and perhaps go with Shelton and Gable, or Fashion Police, or Breezango, or whatever you want to call them. After that, they might look to freshen things up with one or maybe two new teams coming over, and possibly even forming teams as well. So if you look at somebody like Randy Orton, for example, he's really treading water in the singles division, not really going anywhere. He's a name, but he's got real lack of momentum at this stage. So moving him into the tag team division and pairing him with somebody else from the roster might just give him a bit of purpose. And they've done that to some extent on Raw, and that's worked to an extent with Rollins and Ambrose coming together, who between them were really going nowhere fast until they came together and then became the tag team champions. There is the possibility of forming a new team after the pay-per-view, but then the possibility also, as you say, of NXT incomings coming after the takeover event in November.
It would be interesting to see what route they take. Moving on then along the cards, we've got Bobby Roode versus Dolph Ziggler, and I'm a big fan of Bobby Roode. I've admired his work for a long time, going back to the early days of TNA. He's long been a talent, and obviously what he's doing in NXT and the whole entrance, everything, that really kind of come across a great package there. Moved on to SmackDown and then disappeared. They introduced him and then he disappeared off the screens for weeks, and then come into this, what I feel more is a nothing feud with Dolph Ziggler, and this stupid thing that he's been doing for weeks of these fake entrances. I'm not interested in this as a feud. I've lost all interest in Dolph Ziggler completely, and I don't think this will help Bobby Roode whatsoever.
Well, this is it, you see. I mean, when some of the biggest stars from NXT have been brought up to SmackDown, it's been really odd how creative have had nothing for them. I mean, previous to Bobby Roode, Shinsuke Nakamura, when you think about his arrival on the main roster in SmackDown, and they really didn't have anything for him when he first arrived, and he got off to quite a slow start. And you just wonder, well, look, it's not as if these people are coming from outside promotions and they haven't had a chance to at least think about what they might do once they do step up, whether it's to Raw or SmackDown. So it really shows and demonstrates and evidences a lack of forward planning, to have nothing for a character that can potentially be one of the more popular, more over stars on the roster. Roode should win this one, though. Ziggler, as you say, is really of very little interest now as a character. His whole thing around these entrances and making the point that nobody cares about in-ring ability and all that kind of stuff, it has an element of truth to it, I guess. And, perhaps he does feel that way. Maybe it was his idea, but it has fallen flat to an extent. So, nice idea in theory, but in practice it just hasn't worked, and it really hasn't got him any more over. It's just kept him at the level he has been for a couple of years now. So you know, Rude should win this, and it would be absolutely balmy for them to put Ziggler over here. And again, they might think, well, okay, let's try and stretch it out. So let's give Ziggler a surprise win, and then Rude can get his win back at Survivors. But we just see so much of that, and I'm really not interested in any of that kind of nonsense. So Rude needs to be kept strong, and parity booking is not the way to go for him. So a clean, strong win, and move him on to something a bit more meaningful.
Yeah, as you mentioned there, you know, with Shinsuke Nakamura coming up, but Ziggler was his first opponent as well. So maybe this is the thing now where, you know, anyone who comes up from NXT and goes onto the SmackDown brand, your first feud has got to be against Dolph Ziggler.
Well, yeah, it seems like he's the new gatekeeper, and he's the kind of litmus test. And if you do well against him, then you're allowed to mix it with the big boys at the upper echelon of the respective rosters, especially on SmackDown.
Maybe they can put Dolph Ziggler and Randy Orton together as a tag team then, you know, the forgotten guys, or something like that. They can both be angry together, yeah. You know, maybe that's a way of getting something out of the pair of them. People actually perhaps caring about them.
Or it might just put me to sleep for good. This is the thing with, you know, how modern wrestling is booked, you see, that because storylines have to be progressed weekly, and because feuds are burnt through a lot quicker than they used to be, you know, talent as a result are overexposed. And, you know, you get to the stage where Randy Orton, who, you know, outwardly, if you look at him, you know, he's almost like a legendary figure now, because he's been a star for 15 years in the number one wrestling promotion in the world. And he's, you know, what is he now, 13-time, 14-time world champion?
Yeah, 13, you know, yeah.
You know, that's Hall of Fame career. And yet he's less over than he's ever been in his career. And that's for no other reason than the fact that he's been overexposed during his career, and everything we could possibly have seen him do, we've seen him do.
Yeah, and badly booked over the past couple of years as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But you know, he's just oversaturation of Randy Orton. We've been exposed to him for far too long. As a result, nobody cares. You know, we've seen enough of him. And it shouldn't be that way. I mean, he's one of the great workers we've seen in the WWE over the last 15, 20 years. He's a multiple-time world champion, won numerous other belts, taken part in so many great feuds, moments in the WWE over that time. You know, we shouldn't really be reacting to him in this kind of way, but we are, because, you know, we're just burnt out on him. And he's not the only one, as we say. Dolph Ziggler is another one, and we can point to numerous others. But that's a consequence of the way that the product is booked.
Yeah. Yeah, get Dolph and Norton together. RKZ, they can be called, or something like that.
Oh, God, yeah.
There you go. There you are. There's another free one for your WWE. Moving on to the US title, AJ Styles defending against Baron Corbin. I'm a bit torn on this, more because obviously I love watching Styles perform fantastic throughout his career, but he's been brilliant since coming to WWE, found another gear, and, you know, become this really good talker as well. I enjoyed him so much as a heel that it's almost took a little bit of a shine off since he's turned back babyface. But coming up against Baron Corbin, he's really got a challenge on his hands to make this, I wouldn't say go so far as to say watchable, but certainly to make this an entertaining and meaningful contest in my eyes.
Well, if anyone can, Styles can. You know, he's on his day the best worker in the company, and you know, he's coming off a, by his standards, disappointing program with Kevin Owens. So I think he's got something to prove here. I mean, not that somebody who's been one of the great workers in the business over the last 15, 16 years should have anything to prove. But, you know, he's come off a program that really didn't deliver as it should have with Kevin Owens. So he wouldn't want to go into another program with Baron Corbin and not deliver. Clearly, he's not going to be able to have the kind of matches that we've become accustomed to with AJ Styles. But, you know, what we should expect is that he can have a good match, possibly even a really good match with Baron Corbin and carry him to one of his best performances. And if you think back to one of the great workers of the previous generation, Shawn Michaels, you know, he specialised in doing that with inferior workers, really pulling out surprisingly good matches against people that were very limited. I mean, you think back to Survivor Series 1996, I think it was, with Sid Justice, or Sid Vicious as he was called, or Psycho Sid. And he had a great match in Madison Square Garden against a very limited opponent. And, you know, that's something that Shawn Michaels is a high caliber worker specialized in. He was carrying limited opponents and making them look better than they really were. And that's what, the test of a really, really top class worker is. And we need to see AJ Styles do that with somebody like Baron Corbin now, to say, okay, here's a limited opponent. Let's see what he can do. And the old phrase in wrestling was about, you know, the top workers being able to have a good match with a broomstick. Well, he's not quite as bad as a broomstick, but he's not one of the better ones, is Baron. So let's see what he can do. And if he can have a good match, or even a really good one, then it will show that AJ Styles at 40 years of age still has you know, plenty to offer. But if he can't, then it might be, you know, another indication that, you know, he's perhaps past his prime and he's on the slippery slope down. And that would be a shame.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far. I don't think that's quite the case. But I've got the feeling he will keep the title here. I think really he needs to, because I just don't think there's any interest in Corbin actually holding the title or taking the title. I don't think there's enough interest in the title itself, other than, you know, that the, you know, started doing the United States Open Championship thing again. But do you think that Styles is going to retain here, or do you think there might be a switch on the cards?
I think there's a possibility of a switch. I mean, obviously they were grooming Baron Corbin for a potential world title run with the Money in the Bank, which he then relinquished unsuccessfully. So they clearly had plans for him, but I think he had some heat with people backstage. And it's a question of whether he's been able to get back into the relevant people's good books again. And if he has, they might decide that actually putting the United States Championship on him might be the way to rebuild him back up to where they intended to go with him. So I wouldn't rule it out. I mean, you'd favour Styles to retain, but there is still that chance that Corbin wins and perhaps stretches that feud out. I mean, clearly there will be programs and matches from this show that will continue after this. And given it's a relatively new program, is Styles and Corbin, this is one that they might decide to kind of go a little bit longer with. So therefore, you know, it's certainly something you can't rule out. But yeah, I mean, Styles should be the favourite, but Corbin has that chance of victory.
Mm-hmm. What about the women's title then? Natalia defending against Charlotte Flair. Now, could we possibly see here that Charlotte wins the title and then we get a cash in? Do you think that could that happen? Because what I'm thinking here is, when you look through the card, there's not an awful lot on there to really grab you, is there? I mean, it's been predominantly built around Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens, and the women's title picture has been a little bit flat lately, and it does feel as though Natalia is just a kind of a placeholder for something else. So I do wonder more, is that what we could potentially see here as a way to jump straight into a feud between Carmella and Charlotte?
Oh, I think that's very possible. I mean, Charlotte obviously came back recently and, you know, coming off of being away, looking after her dad, obviously. And I was quite relieved in a way that they didn't come out with really tasteless promos or some tasteless angle based on Ric Flair's recent health problems. But give him time. There's always the chance that they might
give them time. Give. I was just about to say, give them time.
Speak to, I'm not going to speak too soon just yet, but thus far, at least, nothing out of order or too tasteless in terms of that. But Charlotte Flair is certainly betraying herself more of a baby face than she did prior to her recent absence. But yeah, I mean, in terms of her and Carmella, that's certainly possible. And, you know, this might be the show that, you know, we see that kind of surprise, because as you say, that there isn't really anything on this. There's not much on this card that leaps out as a potential swerve that will leave people surprised. But certainly Carmella emerging victorious with the title, following some kind of screwy you know, manipulation that allows her to overcome Charlotte Flair. That's certainly possible. So I wouldn't rule it out. But I still think that Natalya will retain the title, and Charlotte's time will come perhaps on another occasion. I think that Natalya was somebody I originally thought when she won the title would relinquish it very quickly, but I think that she might just hold on to it, because we do know that they like the belts to remain on heels. Traditionally, the faces get to win titles and then lose them not long after, whereas the longer title reigns tend to go with the heels. So I think they're going to try and build the title up with Natalya as a champion for a little bit longer, and Charlotte might then get a chance later on down the line.
Well, I'm going to put my money on the table and say, yeah, we will have a heel champion by the end of the night, and I'm going to go with that. Charlotte wins, but then Carmella immediately cashes in, so we do end with a heel champion. Now I'm going to go for it. What the hell?
Why,
so there you go.
Why?
Yeah, there you go. Bold prediction, which means it'll probably be wrong. Right, next up, I know you don't care, and neither do I. Randy Orton versus Rusev. It's just a shame to say that. But, I mean, when you, like you said, you know, when you look at the career of Randy Orton and the fact that I do like Rusev, and there's, you know, there's such an upside to him if he's used correctly, booked correctly and everything else, but he hasn't been. And for the way that this has been built and the way that these guys have been booked, I'm afraid I just couldn't care less about this match.
Neither could I. Yeah, the whole angle, I mean, was just a bit of nonsense with, you know, Rusev getting a win and then being awarded the freedom to his hometown in Bulgaria. It's all very, very hokey, and it's just turned Rusev into a comedy character now. And you know, he was a guy who was, you know, almost a bona fide main event talent,
on, monster heel on,
exactly. And the way that he's been booked this year has been nothing short of disgraceful, quite frankly, given there is a shortage of, you know, top tier bona fide main event acts, you know, on both rosters. So for them to just allow Rusev to, you know, turn into a mid-card comedy act, like a giant-sized version of Santino almost, without a sock. You know, it's just really unfortunate and sad to see. And what didn't help was the flag match at Great Balls of Fire, I think it was, where, you know, he really should have gone over Cena, and they chose not to go and give him the victory. And that was a match where, you know, Rusev could have won without pinning or submitting John Cena. So Cena could have at least been protected in that way. But oh no, they couldn't do that. So and Rusev, ever since, has not exactly had a great time of it career-wise. So as much as I'd love to see Rusev get a much-needed win, I fear that they'll put Randy Orton over and Rusev will be buried even further down the pecking order.
Yeah, ever since they went down the whole love triangle angle with Rusev, that's it. His career has never been the same. Yeah, they really do need to just take him back to being that monster aggressive heel, because he's so damn good at it. And he legitimately looks that way, and the style that he can work in, it works for that type of a character. You know, it's a real shame what they're doing to him. But yeah, I'm afraid this match, I couldn't care less about it, and I couldn't care less who wins. But for the record, I fully expect Randy Orton to go over here. Whether that means anything whatsoever, God only knows. Probably not. So on to the last two matches, the two big ones on the card. We'll save the title match for last, because it should be the last one we talk about. So Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens, falls count anywhere, Hell in a Cell match. Slightly bizarre rules for considering you're actually inside a steel structure and there's barely any room outside of the ring. But that, I guess, that indicates that at some point they're going to break through the cell and we're going to see a pinfall either on top, or Shane is going to, they're basically setting us up for Shane jumping off something here. That was my take anyway.
Well, absolutely. You know, as soon as the match was announced, straight away you were thinking, right, Shane, big, big high spot, probably off a cage, possibly through a ring announcer's table. That's just the obvious conclusion that you come to. And, you know, that would explain why they've come up with the falls count anywhere stipulation as well. It's something that I think that has actually been reasonably well built. You know, some of the other programs that we've just discussed, the booking has been completely uninspired and uninspiring. Whereas with this, especially off of the back of the angle between Kevin Owens and Vince some 2 or 3 weeks back on SmackDown, you know, it's really been booked quite smartly and quite well, and you know, helped to get Owens over even more strongly as a heel. And you know, that's been really good to see. So you know, you wouldn't expect Shane to emerge victorious from this. You'd hope that
you'd hope he wouldn't be. You'd hope so, but is that why we've got the false count? Yeah, is that why we've got the false count anywhere, so that he can jump off something? You know, a guy in his mid 40s can jump off something and then land on him, and that's how we get a pinfall. Is that how they, you know, they feel that they're protecting Kevin Owens in their mind?
Well, that's it. You see. You know, that's the way that they potentially can work it. But I think any kind of loss for Kevin Owens against a non-performer, especially one that can't throw punches, is not really going to be great. But, you know, nonetheless, you know, they can always come back and have Owens go over ultimately as part of this feud or program. I mean, it's a bit difficult to see exactly where they're going with this, other than to you know, give Shane an opportunity to go out there and work another big match with a massive, memorable bump, which he obviously likes to do. But you know, Kevin Owens is somebody that we talked about earlier this year is potentially deserving of a title run. And, you know, if that's going to happen, then ideally he should come out of this with a strong win to then move into the title picture. But, you know, if Shane wins this match, then you certainly can't see an end to this program, and it will certainly have to continue for a little while longer at least. But of the two, I would have thought that Kevin Owens will lose it just purely because of the stipulation almost giving away the likely ending, which almost certainly involved Shane taking a massive bump off of somewhere and getting a victory outside of the ring and outside of the cage to finish the contest.
Mm. Oh, you mentioned it's been built well. I think it has been booked quite smartly, and Shane has, for his part, has been, I'd say, fairly good. But I think we've really seen Kevin Owens shine in this part of it. I think in terms of, you know, them holding up their own in the build, I think Kevin Owens has completely and utterly outshined Shane on the microphone and everything. It's again, that segment with Vince, it just really put over that I think Kevin Owens is the closest thing we've got modern day to what Steve Austin could do in terms of that chemistry with the crowd and just that feeling of, you know, the anti-authority figure. Of course, you're going back to the heyday, going back to the Austin era. That was, you know, that was the baby face in that role. Now, we flipped it over and it's the heel, and it's obviously he's putting it over in a heinous way, and he's just doing it so brilliantly. And it's just, it's the things that Kevin Owens says. And for me, it's all the little things, you know, it's just the little things. And it's the screaming and shouting when, you know, when he's in matches or when he's beating someone up. This has been, I think, has been testament the last month to just how great Kevin Owens really is.
Oh yeah, he's a supreme talent. And like we were talking about earlier on, he also, I'm certain, would have been feeling slightly disappointed in himself not to have delivered a better series of matches with AJ Styles. I mean, they had a number of matches together on pay-per-view and television, but none really hit the heights that both guys are clearly capable of. So again, he will go into it wanting to prove that, you know, he can still deliver at a high level. I mean, with Shane McMahon, he's clearly not going to have a match of the year. But what he can have is a really, really great spectacle of a match. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that, you know, could certainly help with, you know, his career trajectory. And, you know, even with a loss. But, you know, I'd love to see him get over with a victory. But, I think that there is obviously that clear tease that Shane will have his hand raised in victory.
Yeah, let's hope not. Let's hope not. That I do think that would be a terrible, terrible direction to go. But you know, let's just see. So that just leaves us with the WWE Championship. Jinder Mahal facing Shinsuke Nakamura. Do we finally see Shinsuke win the title here, do you think? Or with the upcoming tour of India planned, do you think the WWE will want to keep the title on Jinder Mahal just that little bit longer here then, Mo?
Well, I actually think we're going to see a title change. I think that the way that they've booked the lead up and the build up to this match on SmackDown hasn't been the greatest. It's largely been comprised of, you know, Jinder and his cronies, the Singh brothers, staring at the Jumbotron, looking at pictures of Nakamura and laughing at him and laughing at his facial expressions. I've certainly seen better kind of build ups to matches in the past. This is not one of the better ones that I've seen. But all that said, you know, it's been very much the cocky, overconfident champion. And I think that they will go with a title change here because, you know, it's something that I think Nakamura needs as well. I mean, he's somebody that we've talked about on previous pods is somebody who's, you know, coming up towards 40 years of age, don't forget. You know, he's no spring chicken. And, you know, they can't carry on with this feud where the champion Mahal gets two or three wins on pay-per-view and still carry on with the feud. So I think they'll want to carry on with the feud, but they'll have to go with the title change for Jinder to then regain the title and then to tour India, as you mentioned, in December as the champion. I'd be surprised if he has an uninterrupted title reign right through till December and he's still the champion then. I think that there will be a bit of a back and forth And we've already seen this year, and we've talked about it, that WWE is certainly more open to flipping title change titles between different individuals or teams more than it had been in recent years. So that's why I'm predicting a title change.
Yeah, I've got to say, I do quite fancy a title change here, and I don't think that they actually need to have the title on Jinder Mahal for the tour of India. I think if the whole point to the exercise of putting the belt on Mahal was to raise his profile, then I'd say objective has been achieved. You know, because he's been quite a prominent figure. He's been headlining pay per views. He hasn't been very good, but he's been quite prominent, and he's not shied away from it. So, for me, you know, objective achieved. I really don't think that they actually need to have that title on him. They can have matches. It can be Shinsuke Nakamura and Mahal having matches, title matches in India, and for me, it'll be just as popular whether he's got the title or he's fighting for the title. I don't think that has to be a necessity, tour.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, well, probably the most effective, most headline grabbing way of using Mahal might be dream matches with the Great Khali, and maybe in the Punjabi prison matches to boot. So imagine
just
that.
Just as long as they don't televise them.
Oh, God. Dear, oh, dear. That might just put me off watching WWE for life if that happened. But no, I mean, you know, seriously, though, I think you're quite right. I mean, he's probably reached that kind of level of stardom in India. And he has had a fair bit of mainstream publicity in India as well. To be able to go there and be a bona fide draw and get punters in without having the title around his waist. It's clearly not been good for the championship. And as we pointed out, this is supposed to be the premier title in the company, not the Universal Championship, this one. So for the belt to be around the waist for much of this year now, around the waist of an individual that really shouldn't have been the champion, this is something that just needs to come to an end. We have said that, though, for probably two or three pay-per-views now, but he comes out victorious and retains the title. But really, even if it's for just the space of a month leading into the Survivor Series, I'd like to see a title change, and let's just see what Nakamura can do. The match itself, I don't think, will be anything special because, as you mentioned, Mahal is not all that great. But at the least, if fans can be sent home happy, seeing a title change, seeing Nakamura become the champion, then it will still be a productive use of 15 minutes of our lives if we can see a title change.
I'd certainly agree with that. I would, without a shadow of a doubt, agree with that. Now, I've got to say, more, the last pay-per-view we had, the Raw one, that was, I thought we had really good build-up, you know, really, really good build-up all round to a pay-per-view that, for my money, was really disappointing and underwhelming. What we have seen in general, you know, quite often over the past year, though, is the build-up has been rather disappointing, and then the pay-per-views have over-delivered. Well, what we're looking at here potentially is, other than a couple of matches here where the build-up, as we mentioned, has been pretty good, we've got some rather underwhelming and at times, quite frankly, piss-poor build-up. So could we be in store for a pay-per-view that over-delivers?
I wouldn't be surprised. And you're quite right. I mean, it's been a regular kind of trend that those shows that have had a disappointing build-up do end up delivering quite well on the night. Whereas, as you say, those few events that have had a decent build-up, like No Mercy, as you point out, don't quite hit the levels of expectations that most of us have leading into those shows. So, yeah, I think you're quite right that this is something that hasn't had the greatest of build, but, you know, you look at the lineup of matches and you can certainly point to two or three as matches that could turn out to be really good in different ways as well. You know, we've got a tag team title match, which will almost certainly, based on recent experience, be very, very good. We've also got the Hell in a Cell match between Owens and Shane McMahon, which might not necessarily be a great technical match, but as I said earlier, should be a great spectacle. And you know, Charlotte, you know, when she's motivated, is arguably the best female worker in the company. And with Natalya, you know, if she's got her working shoes on, then those two can have a really impressive match too. So yeah, certainly up and down the card, you know, there's a lot to offer. And you know, the matches, you know, by themselves should be really good. But I think the ultimate kind of reaction to the event will be, I think, largely determined by the outcome of the main event, in terms of the WWE Championship contest. And, you know, if that's the final match and we see Mahal retain the title, it will certainly leave a bit of a sour taste in the mouth for fans who might have otherwise enjoyed the rest of the show.
Yeah, fair point, yeah. Well, there you go, folks. I mean, that is your Hell in a Cell preview. I won't sing the Vince McMahon song. We're not at that stage yet, don't worry. But before we go, a word more on wrestling losing another one of its famous names. I mean, historians, perhaps younger fans will not be quite so familiar, but historians will know about him. The announcer, TV announcer Lance Russell died this week. He was probably best known for his work in Memphis wrestling with the likes of Jerry Lawler and Jackie Fargo and Bill Dundee back in the 70s, 60s, 70s. A word on the passing of Lance Russell Moore.
Yes, one of the legendary commentators in the history of the business who passed away this week. You know, a very, very influential commentator, worked in the business for decades, but most closely linked, as you say, with the Memphis territory, which was obviously made famous by Jerry the King Lawler, who, you know, after his the prime of his wrestling career, I mean, I should say, not after his career, because he still wrestles occasionally, even despite his recent health problems of the last couple of years. But, you know, if you ask Jerry Lawler, if you read his book, you know, he'll give him enormous credit to the role that Lance Russell played in commentary and putting over his various matches, his feuds and everything else. And that's why Lawler was able to headline the Mid-South Coliseum in Memphis on a weekly basis and regularly attract 8,000 plus fans to that building for year after year after year, you know, going from the early to mid 70s, right through to the late 80s. And it's only into the early 90s when the attendances started to drop off and tail off. Had many, many great programs and established, helped to turn unknowns into big stars who then went on to have very successful careers. And all of that was really down to the great work that Lance Russell did. And, you know, if you ask the people like Jim Ross and others who followed in his footsteps, you know, they'll all point out the role that Lance Russell played in helping them to develop their own unique styles and ways of announcing matches. And, you know, he will certainly be missed within the wrestling business. So sad news for fans of long-term fans, but especially fans of the Memphis territory.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah, sad news again. But before we go then, Mo, is there anything you're working on at the moment you'd like to share with the listeners?
So I've got an article coming out in next month's issue of, I was going to say Fighting Spirit Magazine. I don't write for them anymore. Total Wrestling. So apologies to the editor of Total Wrestling if he's listening. And yes, my next column my next article, I should say, will feature in the November issue, and that'll be looking at the TV situation for the WWE in the United Kingdom.
So there you go. We will we'll make sure we put that one up on our Twitter account, which, in case you're not following or not aware, is at PW_index. But that wraps up this episode of the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. As always, I want to thank my on-air tag team partner, Mo Chatra, for joining me. And we want to thank all of you, the listeners, for hitting that download button and listening to us on a regular basis. We really do appreciate you being a part of the show. But until next week, when we will be looking back on the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, from me, Andy Wales, it's bye-bye now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.